Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now covering Psalms chapter 77, which I will entitle, In the Day of Trouble, I Seek the Lord. The heading of this psalm is this, For the Director of Music, for Jeduthun of Asaph, a psalm. Well, who was Jeduthun? He was one of the chief singers of the Levites. His name was mentioned here perhaps as a special honor, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown suggest. We read about Jeduthun in 1 Chronicles 16, verses 41 through 42. With them, the them that are mentioned in previous verses are Asaph and his relatives in 37, Obed-Edom and his 68 relatives in verse 38, and Zadok the priest and his fellow priest in verse 39, and now in verse 41, with them were Heman and Jeduthun, and the rest who were chosen, who were designated by name. Why? To give thanks to the Lord, because his loving kindness is everlasting. And with them were Heman and Jeduthun with trumpets and cymbals. So Jeduthun, along with his trumpets and cymbals, were designated, he was designated along with Heman to give thanks to the Lord. He was one of the worship leaders. With trumpets and cymbals for those who should sound aloud, and with instruments for the songs of God. And one more little note here in 1 Chronicles 16, verse 42, and the sons of Jeduthun for the gate. So his sons were gatekeepers. So that's who Jeduthun is. Now how about Asaph? Asaph has 12 psalms, Psalms 50 and Psalms 73 through 83. There was an original Asaph that David appointed as chief worship leader, and then there was apparently a guild of musicians, worship leaders, singers, cymbal bangers, who were descendants of Asaph, and they are mentioned all the way past the exile. So when it says of Asaph, we don't know exactly when this Asaph is ministering, and so we can't really tie down the date of the psalm. Just to make it simple, I'm going to call him Asaph as if he were David's Asaph. We've got Jeduthun in there, and we know who he is, and he was at the time of David, so why not? We're going to assume this is at the time of David, and that this Asaph wrote the psalm. Now, of course, as I mentioned, Asaph could be a guild name, the credit to this psalm being given to a guild of musicians who went by the name of Asaph. Might not be an individual, and it could be a descendant of Asaph, too. Ezra 3:10, writing post-exilic, when the foundation of the temple of the Lord had been laid, about 520 B.C., Ezra 3:10, now when the builders had laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests stood in their apparel with trumpets, and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals. So Asaph was of the tribe of Levites, and he had descendants, and these descendants were still ministering in the restored temple with cymbals to praise the Lord, according to the directions of King David of Israel. In other words, they were still following the worship instructions that David had set up several centuries before. David ruled from 1010 to 970, and as I said, Ezra was writing in about 520 or so. So we begin now with verses 1 and 2 of Psalm 77. We will see that Asaph is one disturbed person. He says in verse 1, My voice rises to God, and I will cry aloud. My voice rises to God, and he will hear me. In the day of my trouble I sought the Lord. In the night my hand was stretched out without weariness. My soul refused to be comforted. Well, he starts out with an affirmation of faith. He says, God's going to listen to me. But as we go on, we can see that he's complaining because God hasn't listened to him in the past, and he's in trouble. Something's gone wrong. Asaph says, In the night my hand was stretched out without weariness. In other words, I kept my hands up all night long. Wasn't even tired doing it. Now, the NASB has, My hand was stretched out. The Holman Christian Study Bible says, My hands were stretched out, plural. I think the Holman Christian Study Bible is more likely because generally when you hold your hands up in prayer, stretching them out, you would stretch both of them out, not just one. And why were his hands stretched out? Well, they were lifted up to heaven in prayer, as Colin Delitzsch say. We go now to Psalm 77, verses 3 through 5. Asaph continues, When I remember God, then I am disturbed. When I sigh, then my spirit grows faint. Selah. You have held my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of long ago. Now why in verse 3 would Asaph say that remembering God would make him be disturbed. When I remember God, then I am disturbed. The NIV says, groaned. When I remember God, then I groan. The KJV says, when I remember God, then I am troubled. What? Why, when we call to our minds God, would we be disturbed? Well, here's a couple of options suggested by John Gill. Asaph could be disturbed about how ungrateful he was toward God's former kindnesses. Well, that could be. Here's another suggestion from Gill. Asaph was disturbed at how God was so gracious before, but didn't seem to be so gracious now. And I think that's what it is. When I remember how God's been so good to me, but he's not now, things are so bad that I'm disturbed. When I sigh, then my spirit grows faint. In verse 4, Asaph says, you, God, have held my eyelids open. Now, why would God be holding his eyelids open? Well, it means that Asaph was so troubled he couldn't sleep, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. He couldn't sleep, but he couldn't speak either, because in verse 4, the end of the verse, I am so troubled that I cannot speak, Asaph says. In verse 5, Asaph says, I have considered the days of old, the years of long ago. Now, John Gill has an option as to what that means, the days of old. Gill says that Asaph could be referring to the former part of his life. So Asaph would be saying, I remember when I was younger, everything was just hunky-dory, was nice, and now things are lousy. Gill and Clark suggest that rather than that, Asaph is considering the days of old with respect to Israel's history. I have considered the days of Israel's history, the years of long ago. And as we see, the context is going to favor that as we go through and read all about Israel passing through the Red Sea and leaving Egypt and so forth. So I think that's what Asaph is saying here. I've considered the days of Israel's history, the years of long ago. And why does he want to do that? Because he wants to see deliverance, because God delivered Israel in the past, and he wants to be personally delivered. And so it's a nice thing to think about, God's deliverance. We go now to Psalms 77, verses 6 through 9. Asaph continues, I will remember my song in the night. I will meditate with my heart, and my spirit ponders. Will the Lord reject forever? And will he never be favorable again? Has his loving kindness ceased forever? Has his promise come to an end forever? Has God forgotten to be gracious, or has he, in anger, withdrawn his compassion? Selah. Now, in verse 6, Asaph says, I will remember my song in the night. Does that mean I will remember my song which has been sung in the night, or does it mean he will remember in the nighttime his song? Does nighttime go with his remembering, or does nighttime go with his singing the song? Well, the Holman Christian Study Bible and the Bible in Basic English make it clear that the nighttime goes with remember. I will remember at nighttime my song that I used to sing. Psalm 76, 6, first part of the verse, the Bible in Basic English says this, the memory of my song comes back to me in the night. And that makes it pretty clear. Holman Christian Study Bible says, at night I remember my music. So this is when he's remembering his song was in the middle of the night when he had his hand stretched out to God all night long. What song is he remembering? John Gill suggests that he is remembering a song of praise which was sung during happier times. Adam Clark suggests that verses 7 through 9 are the song that Asaph is remembering, that he says, I'll remember my song, colon, verse 7. Will the Lord reject forever, and will he never be favorable again? That's sort of a dreary song. Has his loving kindness ceased forever? Da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't think so. I think that Gill is right that Asaph is remembering a song of praise that Asaph sung in happier times. Asaph says at the end of verse 6, I will meditate with my heart. What is he going to meditate about? Well, he's going to try to figure out why it seemed like God had forsaken him. Now, what is meditation? The NIV Study Bible says it is focused, repetitive thinking, which is concentrated on a single subject with all distractions blocked out. That's a great definition. It's a combination of reviewing, repeating, reflecting, thinking, analyzing, feeling, and enjoying. That's a pretty good description. Now, a question arises here. Is it wrong to meditate because so many false religions practice meditation? Well, you know, many false religions practice healing. Should we not pray to God for healing? There's demonic tongues. Should we not speak in tongues, even though Paul says, I speak in tongues more than you all? False religions imitate everything. The Buddhists have scriptures. Should we therefore throw our Bibles away because the Buddhists have sutra, scriptures? Well, of course not. Well, false religions have meditation. We should not throw out meditation either. In fact, right here, Asaph says, I will meditate with my heart. There's obviously nothing wrong with doing that. Meditation is a mere tool. It is not good or bad in itself. The object of the meditation decides whether the meditation is bad or not. If there is no object of meditation, if one opens up one's mind as in a vacuum, then one is putting out the welcome mat for demons. Of course, that's the bad kind of meditation. You don't ever want to do that, transcendental meditation and that kind of stuff. Nothing wrong, though, if you fill your mind up with the scriptures of God or thinking about what God's done for you in the past or just thinking about Jesus being with you. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's a good thing to do. We should do it more often. I just gave some advice to a young Chinese Christian woman, very dedicated woman, whose mother, stage 4 cancer patient. I gave her a list of healing scriptures I got off the internet. I said, just meditate on these, memorize them, repeat them, say them over and over. I tell you, there's a lot of sick Christians that don't do that. Most of them probably don't do that. And when you're sick, man, that's when you really need to be focusing on that one thing. You need to be concentrated on a single subject. Then have you study Bibles with all distractions blocked out. Pray for healing or for whatever other problem you got. Now, starting in verse 7, Asaph asks a bunch of negative questions. Will the Lord reject forever? Will he never be favorable again? Has his loving kindness ceased? Has his promise come to an end? Has he forgotten to be gracious? Has he withdrawn his compassion? Well, of course, God has not done that. Asaph just felt that way. Now, of course, these questions were not meant to be answered, but if we were standing in front of Asaph and listened to him ask those questions, we would say, no, no, no. No, 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 no. God hasn't done any of these things. Asaph continues in verses 10 through 12 of Psalm 77. This is the NASB translation. Then I said, it is my grief. The I there is Asaph. Then I, Asaph, said, it is my grief that the right hand of the Most High has changed. I shall remember the deeds of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will meditate on all your work and muse on your deeds. Now, the NASB translation presents a little problem here, because in verse 10, he says, I'm grieving that the right hand of God has changed. In other words, things were good before, now they're bad now. And then he says, I shall remember the deeds of the Lord, I remember your wonders of old, and everything's hunky-dory, in verses 11 and 12. Well, the NIV translation gets rid of that problem. The NIV says, to this I will appeal, to this I, Asaph, will appeal. The years of the right hand of the Most High, the right hand being the hand of strength. What has God done in all of his years? Verse 11, the deeds of the Lord that I'm going to remember, his wonders of old. It fits. I will remember the years of the Most High. I will appeal to the years of the right hand of the Most High. The past years serving as evidence that God protects his people. And of course, that's what Asaph wants now. Well, that makes sense. Well, the NIV translation is nice, but I can't really find another translation that matches that one. KJV has, this is my infirmity, but I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. Well, I guess that works all right. With KJV, Asaph is remembering all that God has done, and then he goes on to verse 11, the deeds of the Lord, the wonders of old, all your works and deeds in verse 12. Well, that makes sense. The but there makes it make sense. This is my infirmity, but on the contrary, there's a bunch of good things that God has done, so I'm not going to worry right now about my infirmity. Now, the Bible in basic English says this, and I said, it is a weight on my spirit, but I will keep in mind the years of the right hand of the Most High. There's that contrast again, and that makes sense. The Holman Christian Study Bible says, so I say, I am grieved that the right hand of the Most High has changed. There's no but. So God has changed. 11, I shall remember the deeds of the Lord. Well, it doesn't really follow. He's complaining in verse 10, and then all of a sudden he jumps into verse 11 being happy about the deeds of the Lord. The New American Bible translates, I conclude, Asaph concludes, quote, my sorrow is this, the right hand of the Most High has left us. There's no but. Then we go right into verse 11, I should remember the deeds of the Lord. There doesn't seem to be that contrast. Young's literal translation says, and I, Asaph, I say, my weakness is the changes of the right hand of the Most High. So literally, it's changes, so the NASB would be right there. The hand of the Most High has changed, the right hand. God's Word translation says, "Then I said, it makes me feel sick that the power of the Most High is no longer the same." Well, that's the idea of changing it. Sort of a vulgar translation. It makes me feel sick. The Darby translation said, "Then said I, this is my weakness, the years of the right hand of the Most High." That sounds like all that God has done with his strength and power over the years is Asaph's weakness, which is problematical. So let's just go with the NIV here. "To this I will appeal, the years of the right hand of the Most High." He's done all this stuff. He's delivered in the past. He's going to deliver me now. Another thing the NIV does is gets rid of the infirmity or grief. That version just says, "To this I will appeal." It doesn't say, "It is my grief," the 7 years, the previous years of the workings of the Most High. "That's my grief." So you're either going to have to say that Asaph is worried because things were going good for him because of God's blessing, and then all of a sudden God changed. He's complaining like Job would be complaining. Or you can just say that, hey, there's no grief here. This is just an appeal. The years of the hand of the Most High, he's always delivered. He's always going to deliver in the past. Well, as you can see from that, verse 10 is very difficult to translate. Adam Clark says the Hebrew is very obscure and has been differently translated, as I've shown you. We go down to verse 11. Verse 11 says, "I shall remember the days of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old." Now, of course, he's probably talking about the wonders that were done in Egypt, the 10 plagues, the 10 miraculous plagues. It could be a lot of other wonders too, but that's probably the wonders you immediately think of. Verse 12, Asaph says, "I will meditate on all your work." There's that meditation again. Nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing. "I will muse on your deeds." So you think about what God has done in history. It gives you a little bit of security as we live in these uncertain times. Everybody's times are uncertain. They're never certain. History is replete with eras of misery, revolution, conflict, fighting, anger. We go down to Psalms 77, verses 13 through 16. Asaph continues, "Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your strength among the peoples. You have by your power redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. Selah. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you. They were in anguish. The deeps also trembled." In verse 13, Asaph says that God's way is holy. The KJV says God is in the sanctuary. Well, I like this better. "Your way, O God, is holy." That's the NASB translation. "Well, God is great like our God." Of course, that's a rhetorical question. The answer is, there ain't one. There's no God is great like our God. He's the God that works wonders. Again, that's probably the 10 plagues at the crossing of the Dead Sea. "You have made your strength known among the peoples." That's probably the Egyptians, the peoples of foreigners, of course, and Gentiles. "You have by your power redeemed your people, bought them out of slavery," as he brought the people of Israel out of the slavery to the Egyptians. "Your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph." Now, Joseph was one of the sons of Jacob. Why is he singled out here? John Gill says it was for honor's sake. He was the means of supporting Jacob and his family in Egypt. Well, when Jacob's sons were in Egypt. Verse 16, "The waters saw you." That's probably the Red Sea. It could be the Jordan River, but it's probably the Red Sea. "The waters saw you." What Asaph means is the waters saw God, and then the waters ran to the right and left and divided so the Israelites could go through. "The waters were in anguish," Asaph says. Well, that's because they were about to get split open. You'd be in anguish too if you were about to get split open. So the waters were in anguish because God was about to split them open to let the Israelites through. In verse 16, "The deeps also trembled." Both the surface water of the Red Sea and under the surface waters of the Red Sea were blown violently by the east wind. We move now to Psalm 77, verses 17 through 20. Asaph continues, "The clouds poured out water. The skies gave forth a sound. Your arrows flashed here and there. The sound of your thunder was in the whirlwind. The lightnings lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way was in the sea and your paths in the mighty waters. And your footprints may not be known. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron." Now, verses 17 through 20 give us a clue as to what Asaph is talking about here. He's talking about the Exodus, the crossing of the Red Sea, and that's why I've been saying that all the way through the psalm. Verse 17, "The clouds poured out water." Now, these meteorological phenomena were not mentioned by Moses in the account of Exodus. So we get some extra details here. During the Exodus, you got pouring out rain, the clouds poured out water. You also have thunder, the skies gave forth a sound. Sound is thunder. Your arrows, that would be lightning, flashing here and there. Here's a Davidic psalm, Psalm 18:14, that talk about lightning as arrows. He, God, sent out his arrows and scattered them, and lightning flashes in abundance and routed them, routed his enemies. Lightning flashes are put in parallel with arrows. And so here we have water is rain, sound is thunder, arrows is lightning. Some people say the arrows are hailstones, but I don't think so. So you've just got a basic down-to-earth, horrendous thunderstorm going on during the time of the Exodus. Verse 18, the sound of your thunder was in the whirlwind. Ah, so now we've got tornadoes, dust devils, water spouts. That's what a whirlwind is, according to the dictionary I just looked up out of curiosity what a whirlwind was. A water spout's just the same thing as a tornado over the ocean, over the water. So we had that too. That also was not mentioned in Moses' account of the Exodus. The lightnings lit up the world? Well, does that mean the whole world? Well, of course not. Well, I say of course not. John Gill says that, but I think that's crazy. Of course, the lightning is not going to light up the whole world. It's going to light up the area where the crossing of the Red Sea occurred. This is a great dramatic effect. The earth trembled and shook. Oh, now we have an earthquake as well. That wasn't mentioned before and by Moses. So this is quite a scene. Now, John Gill suggests that this earthquake might be symbolical. The earth trembled, symbolic of inhabitants of the earth being thrown into a panic. I don't think so. I think it was a literal earthquake. And then in verse 19, Asaph says that God's way was in the sea and your paths in the mighty waters. So there are paths going through the sea. Sea is in parallel with mighty waters. Way is in parallel with paths. What path was that? Well, that's the path through the Red Sea that the Israelites took to escape Egypt. God was with them, so he was on the same path. And his path was in the middle of the Red Sea, the mighty waters, the sea. And then at the end of verse 19, Asaph says, and your footprints may not be known. Well, why would they not be known? Here's some options. John Gill says that the Egyptians could not follow God because the water had covered over all the footprints. Well, that makes sense. Or John Gill also suggests, along with Adam Clark, that God's footprints could not be known because God doesn't have any footprints because he's a spirit. I don't think that's the answer, because I think that Asaph is speaking anthropomorphically here, and he's saying the reason you can't see God as he leads the people like a flock through the Red Sea is because the waters have covered up his footprints and covered you up too. Verse 20, you, God, Asaph says, have led your people like a flock. So the Israelites are compared to sheep, just like the New Testament Church of God is also. Isaiah 63:11 says this, then his, God's, people remembered the days of old of Moses. Where is he who brought them up out of the sea with the shepherds of his flock? That would be Moses and Aaron. Where is he who put his Holy Spirit in the midst of them? So we see Isaiah doing the same thing as the psalmist is doing. He's remembering. His people remembered the days of old, brought to mind the days of old of Moses. Isaiah writing in the 8th century B.C. Moses is in the 15th century B.C., probably. And so, on that triumphant note, Asaph ends his psalm. Again, the psalms always end on a positive note. Despite Asaph's troubles, being up all night and worrying about his situation, he looks back to what God has done in the past, and he says, well, God delivered the Israelites. He's going to deliver me too. A positive conclusion to Psalm 77, and this prepares us to go in our next audio to Psalm 78. Now, Psalm 78 is 72 verses long, so we're not going to cover the whole psalm in the next audio. We'll tackle verses 1 through 35, approximately half of it, and we'll call that half of the psalm, Tell the Coming Generation That God Has Saved Israel. I hope to see you for the next session, and I hope you enjoyed this one.